is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
New World Report to Peru. Over these last months, Peru is going through many changes directed by the new president, a new political voice, Pedro Castillo, with the big hat. Peru is rich in resources and also rich in controversy over many years. Pedro Castillo, however, represents left of center, and in early appointments to his cabinet, it suggested he was left of center. But now, a series of missteps and a puzzlement about Peru's ambition in the region. I welcome, for the New World Report, Professor Evan Ellis, the Latin American research professor at the U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute. First, to focus on these changes in the cabinet, is this typical of a new president in Latin America for history, to change his mind or to have cabinet officials suddenly leave the room after several days? Professor, a very good evening to you. The news out of Peru is anything but stable. And the puzzle is it Castillo? Is it the people who support him, his mentors, who are identified with radical movements over many decades? Is it the times in recovery from a pandemic that scarred the population badly? Good evening to you, Professor.
Good evening to you, John. It is mostly Castillo, but it's a very difficult situation. In fairness, Peru historically has been known for cabinet instability that flows out of the nature of its political system. But especially since 2017, you've had a lot of political instability, including a time in 2020 when you actually had three presidents in 5 days. But certainly in that context, Castillo's inexperience and his insistence on appointing a number of people who were either adhering to the radicalism of his political mentor, Vladimir Cerrón, or on the other hand, people that he trusted from Cajamarca but turned out to have some questionable attributes has really fueled a lot of these cabinet crises. So he's now on his fourth cabinet in 6 months, which is high even by Peruvian standards. Most recently, of course, you had the person who served just for a few days, Hector Valer Pinto, who actually came out, had been involved in abusing his wife and certain other things. He stepped down. Anibal Torres steps in, but even just before that, you had had the previous Prime Minister, Mirta Vasquez, who basically stepped down over the issue of appointments, the politicization of appointments to the national police and other things. And so, yes, there continues to be chaos and shuffling. I think there have been at least 11 cabinet ministers appointed in the past 5 months. So it certainly makes it very difficult for Castillo to get things done, and it contributes to the uncertainty and really chaos that continues to reign in Peru right now.
It was a challenging election won by Mr. Castillo. It, however, did not solve the divide in the country that you've educated me about. And how is it the opposition is regarding this instability? Is it I told you so? Is it Schadenfreude? Or are there opportunities here for trouble?
Well, the opposition is arguably, contributing to the instability. Essentially, what you have is, Castillo coming from Cajamarca with relatively limited experience, actually no experience in national government, leftists such as Cerrón behind him wanting to take Peru in a much farther radical left direction. But on the other side, you have an opposition, everything from Keiko Fujimori and Fuerza Popular to some of the traditional parties like the Apristas, Senator Trujillo. You have a diverse set of folks that don't want Castillo to go forward for one way or another. And so anytime that he does something that shows remarkably bad judgment, they tend to attack it for one thing or another. And so those continued attacks and pressures and shifting political alliances have really been what have obliged, cabinet after cabinet after cabinet. And Castillo is really kind of scrambling to find some political oxygen right now.
I'm told that President Castillo made an appearance on CNN in Spanish and made a remark about providing Bolivia, which is a landlocked country, although it's landlocked in a rich environment, including the Amazon, providing Bolivia access to the Pacific. This is an old controversy, but the flames immediately started around the palace. The puzzle here is not that he said it. It's that that would benefit Bolivia in some fashion. And Bolivia has a new president, but is heavily influenced by Evo Morales. So I come the long way around. Is the Morales presence noted in Castillo's remarks about providing access to the sea? Is Morales the mentor behind Castillo?
John, it's difficult to understate how badly Castillo's remarks on giving Bolivia access to the sea played out in Peru, especially to the conservatives and especially to the Limeño elite. I do not see Bolivia or Evo Morales as being a force directly behind Castillo, but certainly with the population of Cajamarca in Peru, there's a certain understanding and sympathy for similar indigenous issues in Bolivia. And so the access to the sea is one that's well known. As you're probably aware, the War of the Pacific back in 1879 involved a complex trade-off of territory in which essentially both Peru and Bolivia lost territory. But the option, you know, today is not so much Chile ceding territory, but one of the other options would be for Peru to cede part of its territory in order to allow, basically, instead of Peru connecting to Chile, essentially Peru would then share a border with Bolivia and lose part of its sovereignty. So this has never been even remotely considered as something that was viable by Peruvians. It was always more a kind of a crazy suggestion by Bolivians. But This is also more, oftentimes you have a problem with Castillo, who sometimes is not well educated on some of the policy ideas in history, speaking out of turn on national television. And actually, this was only the largest of a series of different gaffes in that CNN interview. And I think more than anything else, it feeds a sense of frustration among people regarding the level of the lack of experience of their current leader.
One of the joys of this conversation, Professor, is that I get to learn about phenomena such as the War of the Pacific, 1879 to 1884, because as you well know, and I've mentioned, this part of the world was skipped in my 20th century education. So it's a pleasure to begin in the 21st century correcting the record. The War of the Pacific, 1879 to 1884, fought between Chile and Bolivian-Peruvian alliance. This is a tangle because the three borders come together. And Bolivia is the one that's landlocked now, suggesting there's another possibility here. Chile is under new management soon enough when Gabriel Boric takes the presidency. Is there reason to believe that Chile would be accommodating to Bolivia, or in some fashion the three could work together? Because right now, you could safely say they're all left of center leadership in the immediate future.
My suspicion is it would be highly, highly unlikely. It would be politically deadly for Chile and a Boric administration to do that. And probably even the leftist center nature of the Boric administration does not mean that they would necessarily be receptive to this. As you alluded to, part of the complex problem was that even though it seemed today that it's actually Chile that has denied Bolivia access to the sea as a result of that very old conflict. The problem is, as you alluded to, because the territory that Bolivia would want is actually controlled by Peru and not Chile, and hence the Castillo offer. But frankly, absent some bizarre and unusual things, I suspect that the territory is probably not up for negotiation, but it is an issue that reminds us of the difficulties, and probably something that's more heartfelt for Bolivians than anything else, because that sense that they are denied a physical route to the sea is often used to explain in their political discourse yet one of the other reasons why Bolivia remains the poorest country in South America.
The geography, however, compels another issue. This is Brasilia, Reuters reporting. Brazil's President Bolsonaro met with Peru's President Castillo and pressed him on a project to build a cross-border road that would allow Brazil access to the Pacific, traveling from Peru into the Amazon and then across to Brazil. Maybe it includes Bolivia. I can't tell. The map is all I know of this territory. There is the Andean chain there. Is this an old dream that Mr. Bolsonaro has brought to the fore?
It certainly has to be understood in the context of an old dream. As a matter of fact, about 30 years ago, a little bit less, there was an analysis done in the interregional infrastructure plan called IRSA, looking at the various different river and road and rail routes that would be useful or necessary to better integrate the very commercially unintegrated South American continent. And so a number of different projects were reflected in those logical parts of geography. Now, in fairness, about a decade ago, actually, Peru built a southern highway route that goes over the Andes and into Brazil and connects to the south of Brazil in the Atlantic. I believe it's about 3,000 plus miles long. It's just enormous. The reality of the current proposal is it's certainly incomplete insofar as this would basically only go from the west of Brazil across a stretch of basically Amazon jungle and a sensitive forest into the easternmost port of the Peruvian Amazon in a important river town called Pucallpa. However, you'd still have to get over the Andes. And in addition, when you look at really hauling low value per weight things like iron ore or soy, it still makes more sense to take it out into the Atlantic and get it on large boats rather than take it in kind of ant traffic, truck by truck, making that very difficult highway trip over the Andes, even if you improve the highways. That's why one of the Chinese projects, the Twin Oceans Corridor, which was suggested to connect Brazil and Bolivia and Peru a couple of years ago, was, raised some eyebrows. So that ended up also being commercially non feasible. But you're absolutely right. These ideas of connections or partial connections go into the region's traditional lack of infrastructure for integration and development. And those dreams continue to be discussed and raised, although it sounds like this one is more of interest on the Bolsonaro side. And finally, one of the big risks anytime you open up the Amazon is, you might not open up to commercial traffic, but it does open it up to illegal logging. It opens it up to easier access for narco traffickers and others who in many ways are impeded from using those borders and impeding from accessing those territories when there are no roads there. And so the danger in the minds of some is this could raise more risks and problems by opening up that part of the Amazon than necessarily bringing commercial benefit.
Professor Evan Ellis of the U.S. Army War College. This is the New World Report. CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.